Mateer, Joan Mateer, his wife. This is a product liability case, the underlying case. And Kabul Lease, along with others, was originally sued. Kabul Lease filed a special appearance. It was heard. The special appearance was granted. This is the interlocutory appeal for that special appearance. It's quite clear under state and United States constitutional law that a state court can only exercise jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant if some minimum purposeful act was performed within the state. And the exercise of jurisdiction would not offend the traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. The issue concerning fair play and substantial justice is not an issue in this case. It's not been raised at any point. Therefore, we're just looking at the touchstone of inquiry, which is the minimum contacts. And that remains the touchstone in deciding whether or not the state's exercise of personal jurisdiction over a non-resident comports with law. In that regard, there's two types of jurisdiction, general and specific. And there are two very different ways of looking at each of those issues. We have pled and contend that under the facts of this particular case, Kabul Lease has submitted to jurisdiction both in the general sense and the specific sense. The facts of this case are really pretty much undisputed. Kabul Lease was a Missouri, or is a Missouri corporation, and it was formed in 1966. The business of Kabul Lease is to finance, lease, and sell trucks and milk tankers. And it did so, and has done so, throughout the course of its existence. We know that originally in 1966 that CTL was also created, a company which shared the same president as Kabul Lease. And that company was in the business of transporting milk. And that company stayed in business until about 1998 when MTS, I think it's called Milk Transport Services, was created. It basically purchased all the assets of CTL for business reasons. Mr. Honeycutt remained the president of that company as well as the president of Kabul Lease. That company ultimately sold its trucks and trailers to another company in 2007. The purpose of telling you all that is that it's important to realize that while I am not in any shape, form, or fashion trying to allege a piercing of the corporate veil or joint enterprise, it's important to know, I think, that Kabul Lease throughout its history, and at least since the mid-1990s up through the time of this accident in 2006, 90% of its business was selling, financing, or leasing the trucks and milk tankers to MTS or CTL, its previous successor in interest. Its primary place of business is Missouri. But MTS is authorized to do business in Texas, maintains a place of business in Texas, and has two facilities in Texas. They also operate in New Mexico, Kansas, and Missouri. There's a total of 8 facilities in 4 states. 2 of those facilities are in Texas. And since at least the mid-1990s, have been in Texas. Now, through the 1990s and up through the time, there were at least 75 trucks in the late 90s sold or leased or financed from Kabul Lease to MTS. And Mr. Honeycutt, the president of Kabul Lease, readily acknowledges that there was an expectation that some of those trucks would come to Texas. No question about it. He also admits that under the lease situations, those trucks remain titled in the name of Kabul Lease. So what you have through the mid-1990s, all the way through up to the time of this accident, is Kabul Lease selling, leasing, or financing milk tankers and trucks to MTS with the full knowledge that those trucks would be put on the state of Texas highways, driven by Texas residents and employees, and all the while, unless they were purchased, titled in Kabul Lease's name.
Is there some evidence as to the quantity of the trucks that were leased as opposed to sold outright?
The evidence that we have in the record is that approximately 75 of those trucks, I believe, were leased in the late 90s. And then in 1998, a bulk sale transfer was performed, and it's not clear, and that's my fault, I took the deposition, but it's not clear, but it looks like that in 1998, May 1st of 98, 28 of those trucks were sold to MTS in a bulk transfer sale of about $750,000. I suspect that those were trucks that were already being leased, but that's not real clear in the record.
Type of activity satisfies general jurisdiction?
Every single one that the Supreme Court has written that I've been able to find and read. The CMMC case, Michiana case, the Moki Mac case, the Ashen versus King case, Justice Gardner wrote a case, Glencoe Partners Capital, I think, or Glencoe Capital Partners, which she summarized the entire history of those cases. I think all of those cases support our position in this matter. I think every single one of them, or I say every single one of them, the CMMC, the Moki Mac, and the PHC Minden case, they can all be distinguished. But the underlying principles of law that are announced in those cases support our position 100%, in my opinion. And that being said, I will go through and show you exactly how that is. First, I'll deal with the specific jurisdiction issue. Under the specific jurisdiction, the question is really whether or not Kabul Lease purposely availed itself of the rights and benefits of doing business in Texas and gained some benefit from doing so. And, according to the Moki Mac case, there's a substantial connection between doing that business and the harm complained of in the underlying case. Well, we take the position that absolutely they purposely availed themselves of doing business in this state by 10 years of business, in effect, of selling, leasing, and financing these trucks. But more specifically, that bulk transfer that occurred in May 1st, 1998, specifically included the truck at issue in this particular case. While it's true that Mr. Honeycutt is president of Kabul Lease, didn't know exactly where each truck was going, he absolutely knew that they were going to the facilities of MTS. Now, he couldn't tell you that this truck's going to this facility and that truck's going to the other facility, but there was a reasonable expectation that one of those trucks, or numerous of those trucks, would be there.
He knew where the facilities were.
Absolutely. He's president of MTS all the while.
Texas. He, on occasions, are you relying on that fact at all?
I'm only to the extent that it defies logic that he could come to Texas and not wear both hats. I mean, here he is as president of Kabul Lease doing 90% of its business with MTS and then comes to Texas. He says he came to Texas just wearing the MTS hat. I mean, that's what the evidence is. There's nothing directly contradicting that. But only to the extent that I would infer that there's got to be more to it. The other issue about that the contact under purposeful availment was not fortuitous, not random, or too attenuated, it absolutely wasn't. These were purposeful, continuous, and systematic contacts these had with the state of Texas, and specifically had them with this bulk sale transfer.
But doesn't the 10-year relationship in the bulk transfer transaction, doesn't that go more to general jurisdiction as opposed to specific?
It absolutely does. There's no question about it. But I don't think that you're prohibited from using the same facts that might support general jurisdiction in evaluating the specific. The specific requires more and different things than the general, but it doesn't say you can't consider those things. And one of the things that the specific jurisdiction says is that he must seek some benefit, advantage, or profit by availing itself of the jurisdiction. Well, he clearly did that. They made profit by selling, financing, or leasing these trucks to a business that was registered to do business in Texas, had two facilities in Texas. Likewise, he got the benefit of our statute of limitations. If there had been a negligent entrustment case, after all, these trucks are still titled in Kabul lease until they're sold. If he'd had a negligent entrustment case, he would have gotten the benefit of our statute of limitations as opposed to maybe a one-year statute in some other jurisdiction. Likewise, on a breach of contract case. I mean, I know they're interrelated, but technically you could have had a breach of contract case between the two, MTS and Kabul lease. The other issue that I think is important is the substantial connection. Was there a connection between the lease, finance, or sale of this particular truck and the injury that happened with Mr. Mateer? And absolutely there was. This is a products liability case. They introduced that truck into the stream of commerce, knowing full well that it was could possibly wind up in Texas. It wound up in Texas. It's a product liability case. He's a seller of that automobile. And the ultimate harm is a product liability claim. It's a valve smashed Mr. Mateer's hand, and he resulted in some pretty significant and severe permanent injuries. Be that as it may, I think that we have established with the evidence that specific jurisdiction absolutely has been met in this case. But not only there, but I think that we've met it with the general jurisdiction as well because of the continuing nature of those contacts. The Supreme Court of our state in 2007 said that the general jurisdiction inquiry is very different from a specific inquiry. It involves more demanding minimum contact analysis. And I think if you read the PHC Minden, there that was the Louisiana hospital that treated the patient one time. And then she comes and wants to sue him. She's a Texas resident, and she tries to sue him for medical malpractice. And despite all the contacts of the Louisiana hospital purchasing items from Texas, the Supreme Court said, no, that's not continuous and systematic contacts with the state of Texas for purposes of showing the longstanding business relationship. We have just the opposite here. We don't have Kabul Lease drawing things from MTS out of Texas. What we have is MTS drawing things out of Kabul into Texas, and Kabul sending it or leasing it and financing things it knows are going to be in Texas. This isn't the unilateral conduct of MTS. This is Kabul Lease knowing full well that the items I'm selling you are going to Texas and Arkansas and Kansas, Missouri, and New Mexico. In short, I believe that the policy considerations that the Supreme Court has articulated about the requirements and the reasons why they have those requirements so that a person doesn't get yanked into the court in Texas by surprise. The policy considerations are supported by this case. They will not violate those policy considerations. There is no question but for the fact that Kabul knew it was doing business with MTS and putting its trucks on Texas highways with Texas employees still titled in Kabul's lease's name. The facts clearly support a finding of both general and specific jurisdiction, and we request that the court reverse the trial court's granting of the special appearance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Mr. Dickinson.
Thank you, Your Honor. The police court. My name is Brad Dickinson. I do represent the Appalachian Police. Initially, as the court has indicated, they have alleged both general and specific jurisdiction. So I have some questions from the courts. I'll address the general jurisdiction initially, as well as a question posed by Justice Livingston. I think all the Texas Supreme Court cases support our position in this. And I'm going to discuss several of those here in a moment. First of all, with regard to general jurisdiction, of course, the burden is upon the Mateers to show that Kabul had a systematic and continuous relationship, contacts with the state of Texas, not just with MTS, but with the state of Texas, such that it could be considered that Kabul Lease had willfully invoked the benefits of Texas law. With that regard,
are there any cases where contacts with a company that has three or four locations has been held to be sufficient contacts with those three of the states, those three or four locations? In other words, my question may not be artfully asked, but where you have one entity that is doing business in three or four states by virtue of doing business with a non-Texas entity. Are there any cases like that?
If I understand Your Honor's question, not specifically to that effect. I think you can take the PHC Minden case, though, in which it involved a resident of basically Louisiana. And I think there's a little confusion there because the PHC Minden was not actually the hospital. It was the owner, the parent of MHC Minden, which was a limited partnership, actually, the hospital. In fact, the Texas Supreme Court, in their opinion, talks about the fact that, well, they didn't specifically go directly for the operating entity of the hospital. But in that general jurisdiction case, after noting, as they had in other cases, that not only must you have, it's not an empirical analysis, but the requisite level of contacts is substantial in order to satisfy general jurisdiction. Then they went through the PHC Minden facts, comparing them to the Helicopteros Nacionales case, and in both of those cases stated it was not sufficient. And they went through in the PHC Minden, they had basically a relationship over several years between PHC Minden and Texas entities, in which I believe they said there were over 136 entities that company did business with in Texas, and resulting in payments to them of over $1.5 million over those 8 years. The court held that that was not sufficient. The employees made trips to Dallas, in fact, which were not sufficient. And they had other contracts, ongoing contracts with Texas entities, although they didn't go into the millions of dollars, but they did have those, and the court said, in considering all of those, that is still not sufficient. That is far less than we have here, and in fact, one of the things I think that's important to realize is this wasn't a matter of Kabul Lease reaching out to Texas. It was a matter of Kabul Lease doing every single thing it did within the state of Missouri. Its offices were there. It owned no property in Texas, is not registered to do business in Texas. It does not have a registered agent. It's always been incorporated under the laws of Missouri. Going to a question that Justice Gardner asked with regard to the trips by Mr. Livingston to Texas. Yes, those are totally separate and distinct, and I don't think that can satisfy a basis for general or specific jurisdiction, because just like in the Minden and Helicopteros case, in Helicopteros they talked about how the chief executive from the company came to Texas several times over several years. They entered into millions of dollars of purchases of equipment, helicopters and supplies in Texas, in fact, from Fort Worth, from Bell Helicopter, that their employees came to Bell Helicopter for extensive helicopter training, and the fact that these executives, employees, and all these other factors came to Texas was not sufficient. More importantly, under the factual context of this case, and although the standard of review is de novo, where there are factual issues, and there's been no findings of fact or conclusions of law, the court must, of course, infer the facts in support of the trial court's determination, unless they've been challenged or just show the opposite. In this case, we have a situation in which the CEO, the president of Kabul Milk, said, we don't have to go to Texas. We do nothing for Kabul's business. Everything's done right here. It's on paper. It's done in Missouri. Once this transaction's done, it's finished. It's over. We don't advertise. They don't even have a website. There was no reason for him to come to Texas as representative of Kabul. And there seems to be some confusion. On the one hand, I hear the Mateer saying, well, we're not trying to pierce the corporate veil. But on the other hand, they're saying, well, you can't come as one and not be the other.
Well, what would have happened if, say, for example, MTS defaulted on the financing for a few trucks? Wouldn't Kabul have to come to Texas to reclaim those vehicles?
To reclaim the vehicles?
To exert their lien?
A scenario I not considered until you just brought it up. If they had to come here, I suppose that'd be true, but I don't think that the it could just as easily be New Mexico, Oklahoma, or Kansas. Because as the evidence showed, I mean, yes, that is possible. They would have to come here. But that under that theory, Worldwide Volkswagen would be wrong. Every other case would be wrong. Michiana would be wrong because they purchased it from, in that case, an RV in, it was either Michigan or Indiana, but mm-hmm. Michiana. They brought it to Texas, had it shipped to Texas. Had they refused to pay something or made some other claim, Michiana would have to come to Texas to get it, certainly. But that would not change the fact that the sale, the transaction occurred in, I believe it was Indiana, actually, and that it was done, began and ended there. And that's the same thing here. Yes, he testified that he anticipated that it was possible when you're selling these trailers, milk trailers, basically, selling them, it was actually 27 that they sold. He anticipated that, it's possible that some of them might go to Texas. It's also possible that some of them might not. And with regard to the one at issue, and that's the key, the one at issue in this case was one of those 27 that was sold in 1998 by Kabul to MTS. Is it possible that one would never have entered the state of Texas? Yes. It might have gone to one of the other several facilities. In fact, the evidence was clear that the majority of their business, their primary business, is actually in the state of New Mexico. They do have facilities, the two facilities in Texas, but the majority of their business, or at least primary business, is located in New Mexico. So it could have just as easily have ended up there. Going to the specific jurisdictional issues, that is a two-step inquiry. First of all, and what has been considered the touchstone of jurisdictional due process, is the purposeful availment. They have to show that Kabul purposefully availed itself of Texas laws, of a desire, a benefit to be protected by Texas laws. And second, as noted by the Supreme Court in the Mokey Mack, there must be a substantial connection between the context indicating purposeful availment and the operative facts of the litigation. And before I go into that too much, I'd like to once again focus on the Michiana case, because one of the things that I thought was noteworthy in that case that I think directly applies to this case is the fact that the court said you can try and work your deals such that you intentionally don't subject yourself to jurisdiction. And in fact, that's what they said in that case, that you can do that. If you take that in this case, we have a separate entity involved only in financing and then later sometimes sales. Those contracts are completely undertaken in the state of Missouri by both entities who are Missouri residents. Kabul Lee said we do not get involved in any form or fashion as to where they're going to go. That's a Milk Transport Services or MTS issue. If there is a repair, a problem, anything that needs to be undertaken with these, we have nothing to do with it. That's all MTS. Once they're leased, that's it. All we do is do the financing, get the lease payments paid to them in Missouri. Obviously, the contract for the sale of these shows an indication, an intent by the parties to make sure that that transaction jurisdiction with regard to those transactions and those contacts is limited to the state of Missouri.
Mr. Dickinson, do you happen to recall examples of the kind of generic contract or financing agreement or leasing agreements? Were those admitted at the hearing?
There was the sale, okay. The bulk sale. I believe it's, and I apologize, okay. I believe that's Exhibit 2
to the
reporter's record that shows the sale. And again, counsel said 20. I thought it said 27,
okay.
But I believe it's 27. But in either event, that's neither here nor there. But yes, that contract for the sale is included in the record, which shows all those entities that it was undertaken solely in fact, I believe it's Kabul, Missouri, but that both parties were there and that's where it was undertaken. With regard to the purposeful availment, one other thing, and I think that's also very important, as noted by the Supreme Court in Moki Mac, is that only Kabul's contacts can be considered, not the actions of a third party or some other entity. Thus, you cannot attribute for purposes of special jurisdiction the actions of MTS because, as acknowledged by counsel, they are separate corporate entities, and the burden was upon them, as set forth in the Commonwealth and Minden case, that if they were going to claim that, they had to essentially almost go beyond piercing the corporate veil, that just showing relatedness is not enough, showing total and complete ownership and control, as they did in the Commonwealth case, was not enough. It must be such that they do not function in any manner almost as separate entities. So you can't attribute the actions of MTS for purposes of specific jurisdiction. The last thing I'd like to address, unless the court has questions, is whether or not there's a substantial connection for purposes of specific jurisdictional analysis. We do not believe that they satisfy that prong either. Certainly the purposeful availment we think is clear, but with regard to the substantial connection, their argument seems to be they sold this trailer. There is litigation going on in Texas, a products liability claim in Texas. Thus, there is a connection. And I don't think you can make that leap from a causal, because what the Supreme Court has said, proximate cause is not the test. They address that at issue in Moki Mac, because in Moki Mac, as the court may recall, it involved a company that they said, absolutely, you solicit business in Texas. I believe it was either in New Mexico or Arizona, outdoors, outfitters kind of organization. They sent brochures to Texas residents, tried to encourage Texas residents to come and participate. Unfortunately, and apparently a young man or young woman, I can't recall, was fatally injured during one of the trips. And the court said, oh, yes, you do satisfy the first prong. You have purposefully availed yourself of the benefits of Texas law by advertising, directly soliciting people in Texas. But they then went on to say that the promises they made that these people were going to be safe, that they would be taken care of, that they would be watched, what the requirements were, the level of involvement or experience they needed to have, that is not a substantial connection. Because rather it was going to focus on their negligence. In this case, we have the sale of a used tank trailer in Missouri from one entity to another. Who then made that determination. There's no allegation that we were the product manufacturer, that we had altered or changed these things in any form or fashion. The mere fact that a sale occurred is going to occur in every products liability case. Going back to Worldwide Volkswagen, the argument could be made, well, wait a minute, they sold that vehicle in the state of New York. The accident occurred while they were in Texas. Well, the mere fact that they sold it shows a relationship. And the court did not go that far. They said, no, you've got to show more than that. In the moments that I have left, their reliance upon Keene in the stream of commerce theory is no longer the law in Texas. If you take the Moki Mac, the Michiana, those cases have adopted the, I believe it's probably pronouncing it improperly, Ashati case, the opinion by Justice O'Connor in the United States Supreme Court, in which they said merely introducing something into the stream of commerce, that sale, that initial sale, is not sufficient. There has to be more. And we don't believe they've shown that in this case. Unless the court have any questions, I'll give you back the 10 or 15 seconds I didn't use. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dickinson. Excuse me. Mr. Parker.
Thank you. I disagree with counsel when he says that Keene versus Ashot is no longer the law of this state. It absolutely is the law of this state. It's been expanded on and clarified by the subsequent Supreme Court decisions, but the law in this state still is that a defendant delivering its product into the stream of commerce with the expectation that the product will enter the forum state will ordinarily satisfy the due process requirements of minimum contacts so as to afford the state personal jurisdiction over that defendant. The courts have gone on to impose or clarify that you need to purposely avail yourself, you need to show the substantial connection, and those issues. But Keene is still absolutely good law in this state. The worldwide Volkswagen, the United States Supreme Court said that introduction into the stream of commerce can usually satisfy the due process requirements and confer general jurisdiction. Now, of course, we know in worldwide Volkswagen that wasn't the case because that was sold to a resident that went up to New York and happened to be passing through Oklahoma at the time of the accident. And then they tried to bring that dealership down to Oklahoma. That's not the case that we have here. Just like the Michiana is not the case, or the Helicopterus that he mentioned a minute ago. In Michiana, PHC Minden case, he tries to say that, well, there were thousands of, almost millions of dollars of business between PHC Minden and businesses in Texas, and that wasn't sufficient. Well, it wasn't sufficient, the opinion points out, because it was going the other way. It was Texas going into Louisiana, not Louisiana coming into Texas. And in the Helicopterus case, that was a one-time or just very few limited sales of helicopters. And the Supreme Court said, look, these guys were coming over here in furtherance of that one time or that one bulk purchase of things. And therefore, that doesn't confer specific jurisdiction in this particular case. In our particular case, I'm not trying to rely on Mr. Honeycutt coming down. What we're relying upon is Kabul Lease, leased, sold, and financed trucks and tankers from the minimum, from the general jurisdiction standpoint, and put them on the Texas roadways, or knew that they were reasonably expected to be on Texas roadways. Look at the record of deposition of Mr. Honeycutt. I believe it's on page 34 or 20. But he specifically says that when these leagues were leased finance, title remained in Kabul Lease. Kabul Lease is putting its titled vehicles on Texas roadways and having Texas workers work with them.
But the problem that I'm having is that really Kabul's lease relationship is with MTS. And so Kabul Lease didn't really actually put any trucks anywhere. MTS did. So what if MTS did a nationwide business? What if MTS had milk trucks going all over every state in the whole United States? Then would Kabul Leasing be doing business in every single state in the United States?
I would submit yes. Just as GM sells its cars to dealerships that it knows have locations in certain locations, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, they submitted themselves to the jurisdiction of Texas. And I would say absolutely yes. It knew where MTS was going to send those trucks. It might not have known exactly which truck was going where, but it knew and had the reasonable expectation that those trucks would be there. As far as the substantial contact or relatedness, I would submit to you, look at the Mokee Mac case. It is so entirely different than what we have here today. That injury occurred outside the state of Texas, and it was a misrepresentation versus a tort. Here we have a product liability, an equipment defect claim, and they knew with reasonable expectation that the truck or trailer would be on the Texas highway, and we've claimed the defect. You don't have to get to the bottom line issue of whether or not they're really guilty of the product liability or not. The question is whether or not they're knowing, reasonably expecting that the truck would be on Texas highway, is that substantially related or connected to the product liability claim? And I would say absolutely yes, it is. I probably have a lot more, but I'm running out of time.
Let me ask a question about it might be in my mind that I see the question or issue of what they knew or expected to happen. Might that be a question of fact, though, as opposed to a question of law, so that we have to defer to the trial court's fact findings?
No, you don't, because we have a record, a reporter's record, that has the testimony of Mr. Honeycutt. And if you find that the facts have been misapplied or the law misapplied to the undisputed facts in this case, you get to hear this de novo and make your own decision. There's no abusive process standard.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Parker. Ms. Steele, we appreciate your arguments. And Mr. Dickinson, we appreciate your arguments and all of your briefing today. We will take a 15-minute recess before we pick up our third case on our docket. Thank you.
All rise.